I think you can't be honest in your art and be dishonest in your life, or be open in your art and hide yourself away in your life. The two things go together.
Totally, hand in hand.
Hi, and welcome to episode 122, oh my God, of Art Juice. This is honest, generous, and humorous conversations to feed your creative soul and get you thinking, with me, Louise Fletcher.
And me, Alice Sheridan.
Every time I say the number of episodes, I have like a bit of an existential crisis where I think, God, time's going by so fast. I'll be dead soon. Anyway.
I'm not sure I can equate. 122 just feels like a number. And then when I think, well, hang on, there's only 50 in a year. That's quite a long time.
Yeah, it is quite a long time. This week, we're going to continue our theme from last week, where we talked about building an art career. And I talked to Alice about how she built her career. And we're going to turn the tables this week. And Alice is going to talk to me about that. But before we get to that, what have you been up to this week, Alice?
Okay, well, my little weird techie win for myself was re-adding my blog to my website, which I am quite ridiculously excited
about. Where did
about.
It go?
Well, it's always been there, but it's been kind of podcast swamped.
Right.
Because the podcast show notes we put on as blog posts. And for the life of me, I couldn't work out how to get though just those not to show on the blog page. So even though there were occasional other posts, you know, they were just lost in amongst all these podcasts. And then one night I thought there just has to be a way to do it. And I've tried this before. I've tried code that you put in that excludes a certain category and it just didn't work and it didn't work. Anyway, then I worked out how to do it. So I have now got where it says blog doesn't show the podcast stuff. Yay! Well,
and that's the same as me now, because my new site does that automatically. So that's good.
Yeah. And actually, once I thought, hang on, there has to be a clear way of doing it, it was fairly straightforward. Basically, I just did what we do in the podcast and I recategorized everything else to studio notes. And then I've got a page that just says show studio notes. Duh.
Ah,
but it just meant that I had to go through, you know, 90 different old blog posts and just recheck what category they were under. And then I couldn't work out, well, you know, when it does that little thing where it shows related content, you may also be interested in this. Of course, that's not done on categories in WordPress. That's done on tags. So then I just had to go through and redo all the tags, tag everything. So Paul was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm finally finding a solution to something that's been bothering me for about a year and a half. So that felt quite good. And then it does. And then I've been doing, I did a live continuation of a painting in a group that you and I have had going. And I really enjoyed doing that. It was really, it felt like one of those things that was a bit, oh gosh, I don't know how my brain thinks while I'm painting. You know, how am I going to be able to talk and do it and it makes sense to anybody so that it's useful? But it was really good fun to do. And I think what was interesting about it was I was working on three different paintings, or two of them, and they've come out quite different, but with similar colours. And I'm wondering now whether I might keep them as a group of three paintings, one that's quite landscape, one that's really abstract, and one that's somewhere, so that you've got a sort of family group that almost tells a story of continuation. I don't know. So that's just tickled my brain this week.
I thought that was a really good demo and, you know, brave to do it live, because the way my process works, nothing gets resolved necessarily on any kind of schedule. And so I'd be terrified that in the live demo, it just got worse and worse and worse. And then it was time to stop. It'd be like, well, I hope that was educational.
Exactly. There is always this possibility. And I had that too. So, yeah, no, but it was interesting. But this is the point, isn't it? If it gets worse and worse and worse, actually, sometimes maybe it's quite nice to see that too.
Yeah.
But I guess then you've got to have a part two, haven't you? You've got to have the bit where it gets better at some point. So what about you?
What about me? And of course, I have to go back and look at my notes because I've already forgotten what it was I was planning to say. Because I'm so normally when I get to time to be launching something, which I'm approaching now, whether it's paintings or whether it's something more businessy, I get to this point I've mentioned before where I stop writing things down in my planner altogether.
Yeah.
Because it's just too busy and I'm too disorganized and it's too chaotic and I'd rather not. I just forget about writing anything. So this year I've decided to be more organized. And what's funny is, so I came on here about to tell Alice, oh, you should see how organized I am and what I've done. And I'm doing just like you. And and before I got a chance to tell her that, she said, oh, let me show you what I've been doing, and pulled up this new software that she's using to organize things, which is like mega version of anything I'm doing. So I'm still behind Alice in my organization skills, but I have put together, for example, a Google calendar of everything that happens during the course, days and times, so that everyone on my team can see it. That's a first.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah, and I'm writing, I've mapped out everything, or I'm in the middle of mapping out everything I have to do between now and the date when the course starts. Because what happens to me is, if I have unfinished tasks, things that have to be done, they all mount up in my head as a big pile. And it's very stressful. And they all feel, it's like they're all screaming for my attention on the same day. Some people seem able to think, okay, well, that's for 2 weeks from now. I'll think about that then. I've got to do this. My brain doesn't seem able to do that. So all that happens is I feel like, I've got too much. And even on a daily basis, that can happen. I can have this big list of things and they just feel overwhelming because it's as if I feel like they all have to be done that minute. And so it really helps me to map out, okay, on that day, I'm going to get this done, on that day, this done. And so at the moment, I've got a massive, do you know Carrie on Homeland, where she has that, I don't know if you watch Homeland, but that massive cork board with all the sticky things. And so I've got sticky things everywhere telling me every task that needs to be done. And then what I'm going to do today is break that down into, okay, which week does that need to be done? And then which day? And then I'm hoping that that will A, make me feel more in control, and B, give me a roadmap for next year when I have to do this again and perhaps not be so stressful. So it's, I wish you could see what Alice has done because it's very, very impressive. But as a disorganized person, I feel like I'm quite proud of what I've done.
Well, yeah. And I would say that that's only, this is like what, version 4 or version 5 of it. And I just started exactly like you. And I have to say, right, just to make you feel better, this is my plans for my live streams.
Yeah, that's
that feel better.
It does a bit, yeah. Because plan for my live streams would be like 3 words. So
yeah, so all I've held up is like literally a sheet of papers that are really scrappy, because I was just like, how am I going to talk about this? And I do have an idea of what I want to cover, but sometimes getting it out typing doesn't work for me. I have to write it by hand. But it's the kind of storing it and keeping it in a place where you can find it again. And this applies to everything, actually. You know, this applies to how I do planning art shows, drawing up like what I want website pages to look like. And I think it goes right back to design days. Like, you know, when you'd first do a design of something, you'd just plan it out roughly by hand before you went anywhere near a computer.
Yeah.
So there's always these two different levels. Do you want a little software tip or not?
Yes, please.
Different one. Yes. I haven't used this, but somebody I know swears by using a tool called Miro, M-I-R-O. And it is a bit like, I think, a visual. I've seen what she does in it. It's a bit like a visual pin board, where you can pin things up, move things around, do things in groups, link things. So if you're, you know, it's almost like a version of your sticky notes.
Sticky things. Oh, yeah. That might be interesting.
But I don't know if you've got time to investigate it. I haven't yet done it, but
I probably won't this time. No. But I think But there is something to that right, doing things physically for me. So when I made the Google calendar of the whole course, first I printed out 3 months of June, July, August, and hand wrote everything on there. So for the first 3 months, I wrote everything. I printed out calendars off the internet and then wrote everything in biro and then copied it into Google calendars, which isn't productive really, I suppose, but it just, I have to physically use a pen just like you. I think that's because we're old, though. I think if we were 25, we'd probably just do it on the computer. Anyway, so that's what I've been up to, trying to be organized.
Yeah. And I think just that balance is, it's just always something that we do and it builds on. And if you've been in the loop of what I'm sharing this week in the run-up for Connected Artists, which is open now. So if you're listening live, it's open now. If you just go straight to my website, alicesheridan.com/connected, you'll be able to see and have a look at all the details. Well, one of the things I shared was a kind of techie tool, but that comes from the next level, from a handwritten planner stage. So I think that there's always this balance of having the two things working together. And that's the only way that you're going to get things done in a way that suit you. So we're on track in our own separate individual ways. We're getting there. Everybody is. Okay, so today we're going to carry on the conversation a little bit because it's an interesting thing. And if any of you are new listeners, and we've had quite a lot of new listeners recently, they probably listened to that first part and thought, hang on a minute, I thought this was a podcast about art and you haven't mentioned anything about art yet. What on earth is going on? And I promise we will have more arty art episodes. In fact, there's one coming next week. But for us, we do this balance. And I think this isn't unusual. Lots of people have different things in their life and art is one part of it. And they also have other things that take up their time that are important to them. But so we want to talk this week a little bit about what your path has been, what led you to the stage where you've got all these hats on and you're balancing all these things, because you didn't start with art. What did you do? So as you left school, what did you do at that point and what did you think life was going to look like?
When I left school, I left school at 16, much to my mother's consternation, and said I was going to be a secretary because I wanted to make money. And at school, they hadn't let me do art. I've talked about that before. They'd made me do academic subjects. And so I'd dropped my love of art, which I'd had since being a child. And so I was going to be a secretary, and I got a job doing bookkeeping and realized within 3 months it was horrible and I wanted to go to college. And so which was my mum's plan, I'm sure. So off I went to college, and my college was doing an experimental degree, which was you could take English literature, which was my main subject, and a minor. And I chose art, which was available to me. So I did. It was a very bad art education, to be honest. There was no real teaching in it. But we did have a studio space and we could go paint. And I loved that. And I remember, I always think about this now, we had a final art show and mine was Ted Hughes poetry with these charcoal drawings that I'd done. And in those days, you couldn't just print off poetry. So my art lecturer had to go to the main university that we were affiliated with and use some kind of big printer thing to make the text, and we printed Ted Hughes poetry, and I did these charcoal drawings, and one of the lecturers that I didn't know bought two of my drawings and gave me £60 each for them, which as a student in the 80s was a lot of money. And I always think, why did I not think yeah, wow, you know, somebody loved my, I didn't. So anyway, left school, left college, got a job working for a company which had fast track management programs. It was HMV, the record stores, for anyone who remembers HMV. I loved music. I loved it there. And I met my husband there, and they were expanding internationally. They gave us the chance to move abroad, and off we went to Canada and then America. And we both did well in our careers. And I didn't think about art at all, really. after we left, until we were in the last few years in America and I started going to painting classes, night school, realistic painting. This was a still life painter that was teaching, loose still life, and just an inkling. When I was 50, we moved home and came back to Yorkshire. We were thinking our parents were getting older, we should really come back. Moved back here and all my painting desires came back. It was so mad. It was just like, oh, I had a space in the house to paint in. So I set it out for myself. I bought materials. I started, the first thing I did was take an OCA degree program. That's an open online college for anyone who doesn't know it. And a few months in, realized it wasn't for me at all. So abandoned that. But there was this drive to like create that came, and everything really has come back from that. I think if I hadn't moved back, I don't think it would have come back in the same way.
Because I was going to ask what was the trigger for the turnaround? And so it was a change of, do you think it was the change of location and what you were seeing? Or do you think it was more that there was a change in lifestyle and it was came at that point where you make certain decisions?
I think it was, and this goes back to woo-woo. We keep referring to human design the last few weeks, but there's something in my human design chart which says, if I'm in the wrong place, I will be thrown off my course. If I'm in the right place and with the right people, I will be. So I'm very dependent, apparently, on my environment for my life to go the way it's supposed to go. If I'm in the wrong place, I'll be off track. That makes sense to me because that's what happened. I feel like coming back home was like coming back to myself. I feel like I'd lost myself when we lived abroad. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's lived abroad knows you do this thing of you have to change yourself to fit in. You can't be the same way. Otherwise, your sense of humor offends everyone if you're British. Like, you can't have a British sense of humor in Canada. People get really upset. So you have to tone yourself down, bend yourself into shapes to fit in, or I did. And then I came back and I just remember feeling like a big sigh of relief in my whole body at being home. It just felt like I belong here. So I think it was that, because I was still working full time. I was still having to fit art around our business, which we brought back with us from America and carried on. But it never in any of that time, even when I came back and started working on my art, occurred to me that selling art could be anything that made money. So my upbringing was very much, you know, you don't make money from art. The one thing I remember I wanted to be as a kid was a sign writer.
And
the reason I wanted to be a sign writer was my dad's best friend was a sign writer. And when we'd go to his workshop, warehouse, place, whatever it was, the smell of all the paints and the brushes and them, because they were hand sign writing in those days. And I thought, well, that's a way you can paint and make a living, so I want to be a sign writer. Of course, that went by later. But this whole sense in my family in that time, you didn't even think about art. You just did, you've said that as well. You just didn't think about art as a career. So even when I got back into loving it, I was seeing it as a hobby on the side. I started to enter exhibitions, you know, I started like we do. I started to put myself out there and try and find places to show my work and sell the odd thing and meet people online. But I didn't imagine it could become anything. I thought it would always be a hobby.
I don't think that that's a bad place to begin, though. In fact, I think, I mean, it's almost the only place that you can begin, isn't it? Because if you start without any experience of doing it and you've got this big expectation of it being like kind of right, it's my job. And I know I spoke last week about, you said to me you were fairly determined. And it was always with this, well, I wonder what will happen if. But I think if you're in a situation where you're thinking, and maybe this is where it's tough, if you have been to art school, like proper art school, that you feel that that's what you're trained for, so that's what you've got to do. But often people are doing it without so much teaching and training about what you need to do to get it online these days. But I think it's if you start as you did, just following, this is something that I want to come into my life, like arms open, welcome it in. How is this going to fit?
Yes.
That's a better place, really, because you go then at your own pace, you know, without that pressure. I mean, I always talk about it like a little seed that needs nurturing, a little seedling at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And for me, what I also find interesting is I always felt a bit guilty. We always think there's a right way to do things. I felt a bit guilty that initially what motivated me to keep going was that people encouraged me.
Yeah.
Outside people. My husband always encourages me, you know, my mum always encourages me, but outside people said, oh, those are good. Oh, I love those. And that I felt a bit guilty that that motivated me. And this thing about realizing your own personality, this thing about you have to be in the right place and you have to be surrounded by the right people. Those were the people that urged me on in the beginning. And funnily enough, some of those people don't like my art now because it's, you know, it's abstract now, and then it was realistic. But that doesn't matter now. They helped me in their way at that point when I needed someone to say, yes, that's really good. I remember my best friend who hadn't seen me for years, really, you know, and then he saw some drawings I'd done and he said, did you do that? And I said, yeah. And he went, oh, I'm sorry. It's not that I'm surprised. But he was like, wow. And that kind of wow reaction was what I needed at that point. Whereas now I very much don't.
Yeah.
I really did then.
But if you think about how we encourage anybody who's learning anything, that's always part of the process.
Yeah.
Like playing the piano, encouraging your child to walk, all of it.
Yeah.
You know, there was a funny thing I sent my son this week that was a little story about a mother taking her daughter to a skate park, young girl. And she said the daughter was a bit nervous. There were all these big teenage boys. And when they turned up at the skate park, she was all ready for her daughter to be overcome with being surrounded by people who knew better. And her daughter started skating and one of the big boys went up to her and she said, I was all protective and ready to say, my daughter has the right to be here just as much as you. And this boy said, if you put your feet a different way, you'll find it much easier. And then spent the next hour teaching her and encouraging her. And I thought, oh, that's a nice story. So I sent a screenshot of it to my son and he messaged back and he said, Mum, that's been around as long as the internet has. and I said, well, okay, fair enough, but it's still a nice story. But the funny thing was as well, there was this, somebody had made a comment on it afterwards and said, the thing is, everybody says, oh, it's fine, you can do it. And then they say, well, actually, the first three times, it might be a bit hard, but you've got to get up and do it again. Actually, the first time I ended up in hospital with stitches, you know, and it's there's a little bit of that in it, is that we need to have that encouragement from somewhere. But it's also quite funny when we have people that we also have people that go, yeah, but actually, and then maybe the first time you might fall over and get up and do it again. So I don't see what's wrong with needing that encouragement. No. Where do we get this from?
Yeah, it's a good point. But I think what's a problem is if you don't, I'm thinking about the people who encouraged me initially didn't necessarily have a clue about art. Like they just liked it because it looked like what it was supposed to be. And I think the problem comes in if the people around you don't, let's say what you're creating doesn't look like what it's supposed to be. I was good at drawing. Yeah. I've been good at drawing since I was a child, so that's easy for me. So, but if it's not easy for you and the people around you are not encouraging, I think at that very tender stage, it's really damaging. And so that's why I spend so much time in trying to encourage people not to listen to people's opinions either way, because when I look back, I think, okay, it's quite funny actually that some of those people were my, you know, gave me the boost, because they're not people who can really appreciate or understand art. Nothing wrong with that, but they're not the kind of people whose opinion I would seek now.
Yeah.
I'm much more likely to ask you if you think this is good than I would be to ask them. So, and at the time, the people who could have said, yes, that's good or bad, probably would have gone, yeah. You know, it's just a drawing. I always, this is a funny story. At art school, well, at my equivalent of art school, so this college where we had this art program, we had a teacher called Arthur Bagley, and he's still a painter. You can look him up, Bagley. He's very accomplished. He exhibits in Paris now, apparently. He was our teacher. He wasn't a great teacher. And he was trying to get us to understand that art had to be about something, not just be a good drawing. Mm. But we were like babes in the wood. We didn't know that. Yes. So he asked us to bring in some of our previous work, and all my drawings were of like football players, tennis players, portraits of famous people, you know. And I had this particular one I was proud of because I'd drawn the Pope for my boyfriend's sister because they were Catholic. And it was really a good drawing of the Pope. Let me tell you, it was perfect. So I took it out really proudly and showed him, and he went, yeah, he goes, it looks like Pope. What's the point? Yeah. And I was like, because my boyfriend's sister wanted a picture on the wall. It's like, what's the point? It looks like the Pope. What's the point? It looks like what it's supposed to be. I just didn't understand, and none of us did. And now, of course, looking back, I see what he was trying to say to us. But So this is the thing about encouragement and discouragement at any kind of tender, you could be starting out age 60 and you're at that tender age of as an artist because you're just beginning. You just have to be really careful about listening to it, I think.
And that's a really good point about, I think it's about regret, isn't it? Or not having any regret or letting go of that, is that I think it's very easy to look back and feel, oh, but what if I'd started this sooner? I wish I'd done this before. And actually, what happens when you start some of these things a little bit later is you've got so much more of you to bring. Like, you know, you said that you'd spent years toning yourself down. And then there comes this point where you're ready to really show up a bit as you, do what you want. So that's going to happen better when you've got a little bit more life experience under your belt.
Definitely. As a younger woman, I wouldn't have had the confidence. We had a business in America, which was, I've said before, helping people find work through writing resumes, interview coaching, etc. And Phil was always saying to me, will you record some videos? I think videos would be really helpful. Put some videos on YouTube about, and I'd say, I am not getting in front of a camera. There is no way. And now, you know, I jump in front of the camera without worrying. And I looked a lot better then when I was worried about going in front of the camera than I do now. So there's a lot of confidence and things but I think that confidence has come through my art. Yeah. So it's all come through making my art, and it's all come through a very, as you said last week, a very steady progression. And it's confidence. Those drawings gave me a little bit of confidence. Those people's reaction gave me a little bit. Someone buying my first painting gave me a little bit more. It's very slow and gradual. It's not like you wake up one day and you're confident and you've got it all sorted out. And I think when people come into it later in life and look at people like us who've done some things, they think, oh, well, I'll never be able to do that. No, because you're looking at us, well, in my case, 8 years on from when I started, you're looking at 8 years on me. If you'd seen beginning me, I was just the same and tentative and nervous. And so, but for me, what happened was once I really began to make my own art rather than drawing, rather than mimicking other people, rather than, once I began to really try and make my own art and let it be what it was, even if it was bad, then I think you can't be honest in your art and be dishonest in your life, or be open in your art and hide yourself away in your life. The two things go together,
totally hand in hand. I agree. Having said that this is a gradual change, I think sometimes we also get like little trigger points or things that sort of step it up a gear. Yes. So have there been moments that either at the time you realized yeah, this is a good thing. I need to do this. So I know for me, taking CVP way back then felt shit scary, but was a huge jump for me. Firstly, in terms of me saying, yeah, this is something really important that I want to do and do properly. But it just opened so many different ways that I think and explore things, which was a real beginning point. So were there any other, what moments have there been for you that have been that jump step up a little bit? Because actually, you know, sometimes slow and steady sounds a little bit boring. Sometimes we need to have a little kind of like...
Well, definitely there's, I think of it in terms of people rather than moments. So you, finding you, because as I've said, you were, you look like you were a professional. You were a woman being a professional artist, but you were in a setting that I could relate to. You were at the time in that room that you're sitting in now, which is the upstairs studio you had in your house. So it was a setting I could relate to. I liked the way you were on camera. I liked your artwork, but you seemed relatable and like that's reachable for me. That seems possible. Yeah. So meeting you or meeting you online, finding you online was a big thing. Because I couldn't find any role models. It's much easier now. There's a lot more online and it's only 8 years later. But then, or 4 years later, then CVP, and there's a specific moment of CVP, which CVP, everybody, is an online 12-week program, for those who don't know, taught by an American artist called Nick Wilton. It's currently running now, so you can't join it. But there's week three of that program. Nick says, you get some wooden panels, you get some paint, and he says, just play with the paint and make something. And I made my first abstract paintings, three abstract paintings, not very good. I just painted over my favorite and turned it into a painting recently. I saved it for years. But I just thought, oh my God, I love this. Like, this is what I should be doing. I love just doing things randomly and then seeing if they look good and then reacting to them. So that moment, and of course, everything I learned in that program, but I think that really was like, it was almost as if shackles came off me. It was almost as if my eyes just opened up and I could just see what was possible. And then the third key moment was when I, and all these were guided by intuition, by the way, sensing there was something in you was intuitive, because I'd seen lots of other people online that didn't appeal in the same way. Taking CVP, and that was a huge financial leap for me, was intuitive. Like, I just know I have to. And then coming to your retreat at your house that you did with Georgina. So it was, what was it called? Something like release your creative soul, or
something like that. Isn't that interesting that that had the word soul in?
Yeah.
And now that's what my teacher.
Well, you were marketing. And for anybody who doesn't know Georgina Noel, so she's big personality person. And when you I've told her this, so I'm not saying anything out of school, but when you first started marketing it, she triggered something in me that I was like, no, I am not having anything to do with this. She's very woo-woo. She's also very out there. She's very confident. Something about her, probably it was that I wanted that confidence and I didn't have it. Something about that triggered me. And I was like, I am not going to this thing. I'm not going to even consider it. And I saw a couple of things you did promoting it and whatever. And then one day, Georgina did a live stream. It was so weird. She did this live stream by herself talking about it. And she was going through tarot cards. I'm sorry, anyone who believes in that stuff, but it's so not me. But she was so why this happened, I have no idea. I went to bed. I woke up the next morning. I thought, I have to go to that retreat. I have to. I don't know why. And it was like the day before, and there was only one or two places left. And I got in touch with you and I said, right, I'm coming. I asked you some questions, but really I wanted to just come. And I booked a train, booked a place to stay, came down in the days when you could do that. And that retreat was so life-changing that on the first night I had a panic attack in my room, like an actual physical panic attack, which I haven't had for years, where I couldn't breathe, because And I knew what it was. I knew it was because I could see possibility of something really big and scary.
I just got chills when you were saying that, because I was just thinking you're just going to say, because you know that something's about to change big in your life, and it's scary.
And it's really scary. And everybody, you know that feeling when, and sometimes it makes you run away, but I was so unhappy doing the job I was doing that I wasn't going to run away. When I left that retreat, though, Georgina said to me, things are going to change for you because I've made a space for you now and my energy's with you and things are going to change. And I thought, yeah, right, okay. Even though this has been a great weekend, don't work like that in real life. And I promise you, everybody, I'm not making this up. I got home really late that night because it's a long journey back from Alice's, and Phil asked me, how did it go? And I thought, what do I tell him? I've just spent quite a bit of money on something that I can't even put into words because it was very woo-woo, all of it. So I said, oh, I'll tell you.
That sounds like we were burning.
No, we were
burning
just,
things. Around a circle with chimes, and we
sacrificed a few puppies. No, I'm kidding. No, it was just talking. But I mean, it wasn't like I could say, well, we went through this curriculum and we learned this and we did this. It was all very vague. So I said, oh, I'll tell you tomorrow. And he walks the dog in the morning. So he went out to walk the dog and he came back and he said, I want to talk to you about something. I've been thinking that we just inherited a little bit of money. And he said, I think we should take that money we inherited, and I think you should invest it in building an art business. I don't think we should invest it in our other business, which is what we talked about, because I can see how committed you are and I can see how happy it's making you. And oh, I'm almost tearing up thinking about it, because that's what she'd said.
Yeah.
And this stuff really does work. It really does work. And I asked Phil, where did you even come up with that? And he said, I don't know. I was just walking the dog. And I just thought, why are we putting all this money into something that neither of us love when you obviously love something? We should put the money into that. So those were the three things. And it was that little inheritance that we were struggling a little bit financially. And that inheritance, which was from Phil's dad, meant that I had money. And this is the part where I might veer off from most people listening, because what I did with that money is invest it all in paying for an audience. So I knew that I was good at talking about releasing that creativity that I'd found with Nick. I didn't know what I could turn that into, but I knew I discovered I could inspire other people just by talking about my experiences that had happened through my blog. I'd built up a bit of a following, and I thought, if I can attract more people who feel like I did a few years ago, and if I can write about it, maybe an idea will come to me. Maybe something will come to me, but I don't know what. But first, I know I need people to listen to me. So I think I invested probably maybe £20,000 over a year, maybe 15. I didn't actually keep track, in Facebook advertising and working real and spending a year providing videos and blogs and answering people's questions for free. I was spending that money actually before Georgina. So it was a year altogether. I was already spending a little bit of money, but after Georgina, I really poured it in. And then after a while, I went back to her and did some coaching with her. And she had like a 6-week coaching program. And on the second week of that, I had my idea for my course that I teach now. Not only did I have the idea for the course, I downloaded the modules. It was like they just came. And I knew what they were going to be. And I told Phil, and he was like, oh, whoa, hold on a second. You can't just launch a course. He said, go talk to Georgina, tell her your idea, and she might tell you to slow down, which we will both find funny because we know her. So I thought, oh,
no way on earth that she would say that.
Exactly. So I rang, we had our call, and I said, here's my idea. Phil says, I should slow down. And she said, how many weeks is it? And I said, oh, it's 10 weeks. And she said, how much is it going to be? And I said, the first thing that came in my head, and she went, right, go tell people then. And I was like, what? She said, no, go tell people. And I said, I haven't created the course. I haven't made any videos. She said, you don't need to. You can do that week by week. Just go tell people. And I did. So I told my following, which was maybe 400 people in a Facebook group and on my blog, and 40 of them signed up for a cheap. I made it cheap. I said, it's not very expensive because I don't know what I'm doing. A bit like with your membership. I said, you know, you can come with me and help me create it, and it's really low cost and it will never be this cheap again, which is true. And 40 people said yes. 40 lovely people whose names I all still know. And we had a blast. It, when I look back on it now, the videos were really low, you know, low key and everything, but we had a good time, and that's how it was all created. So you, Nick, Georgina, if I hadn't met you three people in that order, I don't think this would have happened.
People. Wow. I've never heard you tell it like that before. That's really... it's a good story.
It is a good story, and it's true.
It's kind of got me a little bit like, right, where do we,
yeah,
where
I know, do we, I know.
There's a lot to take on, I think, because it is a combination of, as you say, feeling like things just all align in the right way. And I think this is always a mix between, it's not waiting for things to align, but it's sometimes, you know, we do things and then they kind of like mesh together. It's like finding that piece of the jigsaw and you just fit it in and it's like, oh yeah. And then it feels so easy. It's like, it feels like it's kind of the obvious next step. So when was that, that first version? When was that? Was that 2019?
I think it was the very end of 2018.
Right.
I think it was the very end. And what I did, so this is where, when I say I spent £15,000 to £20,000 on advertising, it was through that time. So I had my 40 people doing the course at a low rate, but I knew, okay, I need to find more of an audience because that those 40 people have done it now. I need to find more people. So I carried on spending, and I made, and that's when I kind of began to step back from my business, because I was doing that course while I still had my other business. And it was a lot of work. So I began to step back from the other business, invest a lot of money in really ramping up to build an audience, and mainly invest time. So for the next 8 months, I spent most of my time teaching people for free. And people listening, just to step back, might be saying, hang on, teaching people what, since you were so new to it?
Yeah.
And that's a very valid point. At one point, before I had the idea for my course, a friend of mine said, you could teach people. And I said, I've got nothing to, you know, I can't teach people painting. I don't know anything. I'm learning. But what I had come to realize, and this is what I want to say to other people, is look out for what other people tell you about yourself, because in there is the answer to what you could offer the world. And the thing I constantly heard from people as I shared my journey of learning was, you inspire me so much. When I watch you, I want to paint. You always inspire me. And I thought, wow, you know, that's the one thing I hear over and over again. And I know I am brave when it comes to painting. I am never scared. So I can help, maybe I can help other people who are scared and tentative and nervous. Maybe I can help them sprinkle some of me on them so they're not scared and nervous. That was my original thought. And then, like I said, the ideas for the lessons kind of downloaded. The benefit I have is I have 10 years of experience in my past of designing adult learning programs as a human resources person. So I know how to structure a course. I know how to teach people. That part wasn't hard. The ideas for what to teach them came easily. But it morphed in that first first session, then I learned, you know, and then I changed it in the following year, and I've changed it a little bit every year since as I learn more and more about what works and what doesn't. But the course that I teach is not about here's how to get that paint effect, or here's how to abstract the landscape, or here's how to paint a beautiful portrait. It's about here's how to get in the mindset where you are not afraid to try things, because what I've learned is that when you do the things that come most easily and naturally to you and that you enjoy the most, that's who you really are as an artist. That's your real voice. And all the stuff we layer over the top of it about shoulds and musts and rules and don't ever use black and don't put white on watercolor and don't, you know, you must mix your own colors, you must never use from a tube and all of that, it all gets in our way. And the rule of thirds and the golden mean and have you done this and have you done that, and we can't think about, we can't make anything original if we're thinking all that. So that's what I realized I could give people. It's not that complicated, but it takes us 10 weeks to get people there because we have so many barriers to that built up. Not everyone. Some people, like I was, can just go, oh, play with paint. Okay, I can do that. But for those people who feel, I don't want to waste materials, I don't want to make a mess, I don't want to make a fool of myself, I don't want to do it the wrong way, for those people, I can open everything up just by being me. And I think we all have things in us, just like you with Connected Artists, that just by being you, you can lead a whole group of people on a path that can help them. You don't have it, you have to just, it's just what's in you, what people tell you is, am I making sense? What people tell you about you is what you should follow.
You're totally making sense. And what I was thinking is this follows on from this idea of what unlocks things. It's like what or who unlocks things within us that we already know, either that we already know we want, or that we already know is some kind of block. And it's quite, you can do it by yourself, but it's quite difficult to do by yourself.
Yeah.
And I was also thinking, and this is something that I find quite hard, is how interesting and how important it is that perhaps sometimes being able to find the word for some of this can be helpful, because it gives a sort of anchor to what you want. And I remember the first time that I heard the name of the full course that you do, and I just thought, that is genius, because it's called Find Your Joy.
And I was at names.
I know. And I was just like, shit, damn, I'm so jealous of that name. That's so good. And it's true. It's the same with Connected Artists as well. And I went round, and there was something else I was going to call it first. And then I realized it wouldn't work because of an American spelling. But what we've ended up with that is so right, because it's connection with self, it's connection with audience, it's connection with other people. And Find Your Joy is so right for what you do. And it's, again, it's one of those things where we swirl around in the mud and then all of a sudden it's like, this is what it is. This is what it is. When so I, what does it...
Go sorry. On. Sorry. I was going to... You go.
So what... But what does it give you? Obviously, it gives you a lot to see that happening.
Yeah.
In other people.
It's the best thing I do in my life. Like, I mean, the kindest thing I do, or the most important thing I do, I feel like, because when you read the reviews of the course afterwards, because we always ask people for what they think so we can see if we can make it better, just the stories, just the emails I get, you know this, and the stories that people send me of, I can't believe I'm so happy painting. I've wanted this for so long and now I'm making my own art. The stories, we have people, so I do a free course leading up to the main course, which is 7 days. And every time we have lots of people who sell the things that they made on the free course, which is pure play and experiment. And a lot of them have never sold anything before. And they come on the Facebook group and they go, my friend just messaged me and said, can I buy that thing you did on the course? I can't believe it. I can believe it because it's they have released that in themselves. And you can see that. We all know that when somebody makes unique artwork, it doesn't even have to necessarily be sophisticated. It just has a life to it and a personality to it that other people want to have. And I remember my friend said to me when he saw the pieces I'd done in CVP when I was playing, the releasing pieces, he said, that's the person I've known for 30 years on those boards. That's you. But it didn't look like me to me. It looked exciting, but I didn't think that was me. But when you release yourself like that, other people can feel it. And so I love that. I get out of it. It's selfish, really. I get out of it the good feeling of having done something good in the world. And I do believe passionately that women in particular, and we have men who take the course, and often it's the case for men too, of course it is, men's voices can be stifled and men can be forced into, and often are forced into, working in a job they don't love, doing things to support a family. But often men often find another outlet for their, you know, for themselves, whereas often women seem to have, particularly older women, women my age, older than me, have put everything on the back burner for their family or other people, and have not ever expressed their own voice. Like I think of it like lions roaring, like I've never just gone, rah, here's me. And they can't, you can't just go from a lifetime of looking after other people to rah, here's me, but you can do it in incremental steps and you can be shown how to get there. And if you just follow along this path that I lay out, and you're willing to do the work, and you're willing to make a mess with paint sometimes and not always make nice things, you can get to the end of that 10 weeks and be a different person than when you came in. Mm. And that is, that's why I say it's the best thing I do. My painting feels more selfish for me, and this feels more giving out into the world.
Yeah. Yeah. And the first step then, because all of these things, it's important to like the person you're going to be spending time with. So the first step is this free part that you do. Yes. So people can find that. They can go to your website. So they can find your website is louisefletcherart.com, or they can just go straight to a link, which is bit.ly/FYJ21. So that's for Find Your Joy 21, bit.ly/FYJ21. It's interesting, isn't it? We've both got things at the moment, and that free course that you've got is going to be giving people a taster of what they're going to experience. And even in itself, it'll give people, you know, it's a great fun free week, dive back into creativity.
I say most people are not going to carry on and do my full course. Yeah. And I'm really upfront at the beginning that yes, this is free.
Yeah.
This is to show you that I've got a full course. I'm not hiding that fact. But I think it's really important to do that free thing. I know people feel a bit jaded by that now, that, oh, there's a free thing, and then they tell me there's something to buy at the end. But I think the free things are really important because that's your time to find out, do I annoy you? Like, is there something I say over and over again that really gets on your nerves? You don't want to come with me if there is. Do you like the way I teach? Do you like the exercises I set? If you don't like those, you won't like coming with me. So it saves us a lot of time if when you join you really want to join, as opposed to everyone wanting to leave again because some people didn't realize what it was, or you know, they thought they were going to learn how to paint dog portraits and I'm splashing paint around. And it's not about abstract or representational, it's about both. And every exercise I set is except for the first one, I think, in the taster course, but generally it's both. So it's not about what you paint, it's not about what medium you use, it's about it's not even about what kind of art you make, although my assignments are painting assignments.
They're quite open, aren't they? In the sense that they're guidance rather than, it's not like follow me instructional.
Yes.
It's here's something. And that's particularly because it's about finding your
own thing.
Individual.
I don't want to teach people to do what I do. I wouldn't know how anyway, because it's so I do is so random. It's like I wouldn't know how to show it. I don't want people to come out of it looking like me, doing things like me. In fact, that's why I don't demo any of the exercises, because I don't want to set people off thinking they have to do that. I want them to explore and find their own way, and I want us just to have a really good time. The 1 week is exhausting for me, because it's every day I'm doing something every day, and it's really tiring, but in a good way. That way, when you go to bed at night feeling like you've done something worthwhile. So I just want everyone to have a good time. Sorry, you're laughing.
Well, I'm laughing because I was up till 3 a.m. last night answering people's emails about the first things in Connected. And actually, this is the first time I've done anything. Normally, it's just been like, here it is, do you want it? This is the first time I've done anything with a little bit of a guide to people to what they're going to get, so that, you know, you get an idea of what the areas are that we're going to cover, so you can find out. I have to say, it's purely by chance, really, that we're both talking about something at the same time. And I just wonder if we should just mention, so if you're listening live, Connected Artists will close on Thursday, so you've got a couple more days to find out about that. But if you go to the link on my website, you'll be able to see all the information. Now it will all be out, and the free course starts on the 3rd of June. So I'm just thinking that there might be people who've been listening to both of us, and they might be thinking, which is the right one for me? Can I do both?
Do both.
Well, they're very different, but what would you say about that?
I think it's two totally different things. So I think yours is, if you're a serious artist, and I don't mean want necessarily to be full time, but you're serious about your art and you want to get it out into the world, and you want a way of building a good artist life and a good, you know, you want to know how to get your artwork out into the world. You want to connect with other artists and discuss the issues that you're facing, whether that's how do I frame these panels, or how do I get ready for an art fair, or I've just had this horrible experience with a customer, what do I do? All of those kind of things in your private Facebook group for Connected Artists. Those are the conversations. And in the content you create, it's very much about, here's how to build build yourself up as an artist. Here's how mine is about, here's how to find your artistic voice. Here's how
to let yourself free thing, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like, this is how you find your voice. This is when everybody says, how do I find my style? I feel I have a way that you find your style. I don't necessarily promise that you find it at the end of 7 days. In fact, I'm pretty sure you won't. But you'll have some exercises and some ideas and some freedom to go forward and work. And if you do the full course, you will be well on the way after 10 weeks. And you will be in that place where you paint every day or as often as you can, because you want to. And by doing that, that's how you find it. So I think they're very different things. The other thing I wanted to mention before we end this, because people might be wondering about this, I always, because I didn't believe that selling art was a way of making a living, because that was ingrained in me from being a child, this course gave me my way of making a living, so I didn't have to worry about that with my paintings. I've since come to feel like that's a real blessing, and I've spoken to a couple of other artists who've begun to do other things in order to fund their art. In one case, it's a person who does a non-art thing in order to fund painting. In the other case, it's an artist who started to teach in order to fund painting. Both of them said that it freed them up, that they love that feeling of the paintings not having to be the thing they have to live on, that have to pay the bills. So I came to that accidentally. because I didn't have any faith in myself. I think now, if I could be me starting again now with what I think now, I think I'd maybe go the painting route and try and make that work. But I didn't have that confidence. But I think it's worth mentioning to people to think about, would it feel freer to you to not have to live on your art? Is that, you know, would is there something you can teach? And that might be in-person small workshops. It might be online small groups. It might be not teaching. It might be working in a bank. You know, that's the first thing that popped in my head. But is there something that you could do that would fund you so you would feel free? Or are you much happier deciding, right, I'm going to go for it with making a living from my art? Because I think both can work. We know they can. We've seen people do both. But there are other ways. And for me, it has freed me up to not feel the pressure on my creativity that I'm not sure I would cope with very well if I had to sell all the time my paintings. But I don't know, because I haven't found out. I've not tried it.
Yeah, I think looking what yours does is it's great for people who are still at that stage where they are finding that voice for themselves. And I think it's also a nice kickstart for people who've maybe been working for a particular amount of time and they want that rejuvenation, go back.
Oh, I was just going to say one of our most common students is the 30-year artist who's jaded with what they're doing. Yeah. So, it's either it's if you don't feel like you found your own creative expression, whether that means you're an experienced artist or a total beginner, doesn't matter. Yeah. If you feel like I'm not being me when I paint, that's what it's
about. Yeah. And I think connected artist, as you say, some of it is more, you know, the nuts and bolts and the things to put in place. But it's balanced with obviously developing your work as you go. But probably if you're already in a place where you kind of know what direction you're going with it, but you need,
we have both, don't we? We have a lot of crossover. So you might actually be both.
You can
be someone who's, because you always teach this and it's true, you can be someone who's developing your voice and still doing your Instagram, getting your Pinterest going, right, making your website, because we never get to the point where we're done, do we?
No. And that's always going to be part of it. Like your studio work, that's why it's one of the three key pillars, you know, that's still part of something that you always develop, so that doesn't just go away. Okay, we have gone on really long, but actually,
sorry everybody.
But I hope that really has given you an insight, which is the point of this, really. I just think it's always interesting hearing other people's life stories and how they got to where they got to. So I'm not sure what I would want to go back and cut out of that, so you're going to get a long one this week.
You can always turn us off if you get bored.
Okay, so I'm going to go first with my What's Inspired, because it kind of follows on. So I hope you can find this on BBC Sounds, but I caught a little bit of an audio. So this is on Radio 4, but we'll put the link in the show notes. And it's called The King's Painter, and it was about the life and times of Hans Holbein. And it was I have to admit, I haven't heard all of them, but I'm going to go back and listen, because it's all about the life story of Hans Holbein, the 16th century artist. The bit that I heard was it was a nice storytelling thing. And the bit that made me laugh was the bit where at one point his paintings really weren't selling very well. And the measure by which he judged that was that he could only buy wine by the glass, not the bottle. So I just thought it's interesting that, you know, this, how you marry it all together. That's been going on since the 16th century. We're good. Yeah. We're good. So what about you? What's inspired you this week?
Oh, mine's a bit of the negative inspiration that's positive in a way. So we have gone back to watch something that was on in the 90s. I was just checking. Prime Suspect. Do you remember Prime
Suspect? Oh, yes. With Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren. Right. I remember that being amazing. And it is still very good. It's very dated in the production, but it's from 1991, which is not that long ago. And what is shocking and inspiring in a way is how sexist it is. How, I mean, it's showing a sexist workplace, the British police force in the 90s, and she's a female detective who rises up the ranks. But in the first episode in particular, the sexism, it's a story about sexism, but just the, you wouldn't make that story the same way today because people wouldn't say out loud the things they say. And it, and also in the second series, racism, the things people are saying on TV to demonstrate racism, you wouldn't dream of saying. And it made me feel quite positive. Also, the fact everybody's smoking, every verse end, someone lights up a cigarette inside in a hospital. Last night's episode. What? But it just makes you realize how far we've come in a short time. Sometimes progress feels really slow. You know, things like with the Black Lives Matter and all of that horrible shooting, that horrible death of the George Floyd and everything. You can feel like, oh, we're not making any progress. But you look back to 1991 and you realize we have made huge strides in both those things. And yes, we have a long way to go, particularly in race relations, but thank goodness we're not where we were then. And then I noticed it. I mean, I noticed sexism, I noticed racism, but I didn't realize it was egregious as it is in that program. It's like, oh.
I thought you were going to say, your notes say how times have changed. I thought you were going to talk about, do you remember what life was like without mobiles and before people had computers? And
no, I was going, I'm saying how much better it is now. Yeah. I hate when people say, oh, do you remember how lovely it was in the old days? No, just go watch Prime Suspect and remind yourself that if you live in Britain, what it was like just a few years ago.
We were watching something, I can't remember the name of it. Is it called Halston? We just started on Netflix, about the designer, a hat designer that turned into a fashion designer. It's set in the 60s. And of course it starts all brilliant. And I said, oh, look at that. And Paul just said, it's all nonsense. He said, real life, you know, 60s was really rough around the edges. It doesn't look like that.
Exactly.
Okay, we had better wrap this up.
I think
if you are still listening, you deserve some kind of medal. I don't know what. Maybe you've done it in two steps, or maybe you've given up and you're lying on the sofa with a cold compress on your head by now. But thank you very much. And next week, we have got something quite different for you. So keep posted and we will see you then. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.